Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
This is just going to be you and me, ladies and gentlemen. Just you and me, you know? Nothing else. Just you and me. Like it ever is. Anything else? No, sometimes it is, actually. First up, couple of words. One that I didn't discover, it was new to me this week, and I share it with you in case it's new to you. The other is a word that I did make it up, and I have a new goal in life, because, you know, you have to have goals. It's to get this word into the OED by the end of the year, and I don't think that's asking a lot. They work all the time, don't they? They revise constantly. They have an online edition, don't they? They don't have to answer any of these. So the word that I overheard sitting in an airport lounge in Los Angeles this week. Was it this week? the travels, ladies and gentlemen, they blur. A woman was on the phone, obviously in the biz, as we say, or in the business. And throwing this word around with practiced abandon. And it just struck me in an era when the word reality, as applied to television, has become an amiable cross between a fraud and a joke. This woman came up with the appropriate replacement. DocuSoap. It's a DocuSoap. Of course it is. So let's all try to use it in every appropriate and inappropriate way this week, shall we? And just purge the word reality from our vocabularies until it becomes cleansed again. DocuSoap. I was watching a DocuSoap last night. Oh, it's that DocuSoap. Come on now. You can do it. The other word is the one I am actually campaigning for, because it, after telling you some of the stories of my experiences with the airline business, and no answer from Horizon yet on that $40 baggage charge that shouldn't have been charged because they didn't fly me anywhere. Horizon, three quarters of horizontal, remember. Anyway, after recounting those stories, it occurred to me that we needed a word for what everybody goes through in aviation in the United States these days. And then it occurred to me, flightmare. It was a flightmare. It was a regular flightmare. So come on now. Let's get into the OED by the end of the year, and I will be one happy radio host. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the part of bacterial DNA that often carries antibiotic resistance is a master at moving between different types of bacteria and adapting to widely differing bacterial species. That's according to a team at the University of Gothenburg, published in the scientific journal Nature Communications. More and more bacteria are becoming resistant to our common antibiotics, some authorities say because of, among other reasons, the persistent dosage of low-level antibiotics to the animals we eat. And to make matters worse, more and more are becoming resistant to all known antibiotics. The problem is known as multi-resistance, generally described as one of the most significant future threats to public health. Antibiotic resistance can be transferred to bacteria that cause human diseases, even if the bacteria are not related to each other. A large proportion of gene transfer between bacteria takes place with the aid of what are known as conjugative plasmids. Oh, to be one of those, huh? In the springtime, a part of the bacterial DNA, it can exist only and multiply inside a cell where it uses the cell machinery, but can then be transferred to another cell and in that way spread between bacteria. On the other hand, the Independent newspaper in London reports this weekend that a certain kind of honey from New Zealand can help antibiotics to resist antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So the war goes on. I don't think I was in San Francisco Airport, but I saw plans for what they were doing with it. And what they said was, we want to make the experience of San Francisco Airport just be more like the experience of being in San Francisco. And I didn't know what that meant exactly, until I saw that the San Francisco Entertainment Commission has proposed new rules for bars, clubs, and other venues that host various forms of live entertainment. The rules would require the venue to use ID scanners and video cameras to monitor every performer and attendee. Most venues that provide live entertainment, from plays and concerts to poetry readings, would have to set up ID scanners and video surveillance to track everyone attending the event. In addition, the venue would be required to keep a database of ID scans and video surveillance for at least 15 days and provide all captured images and records to the police upon request, with no requirement the police show any legitimate need to obtain the information. The rules place no limits on the protection or use of this collected information by either police officials or the venues themselves. Well, I think you don't have to do anything. The airport is already like the experience of being in San Francisco. Job done. Mission accomplished. Take the rest of the year off. Go spread the use of the word flightmare. And the new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. Pointing with pride, busting our buttons at the new Iraq. About $57 million worth of cooking oil, once destined for Iraq's national food ration program, may be fed to animals because it was left outdoors for 3 years and past the expiration date for human consumption. It was left sitting at the port of Umm Qasr, since 2008 while officials squabbled over the price. Iraq has been hit by nationwide protests in recent months in which many demonstrators have complained about corruption and pressed the government to address food ration shortages. Iraqis receive monthly supplies of rice, cooking oil, and other staples. They don't stand on their own feet and make their own... The Trade Ministry ordered the oil left at the port while it renegotiated the price with importers. Last month, it finally agreed to take delivery after negotiating the price down to... from $1,900 a metric ton all the way down to $1,800 a metric ton. Iraq contracted for the oil during the global financial crisis at a time when the world price dropped to $600. Good squabbling. Iraq is considered, according to Reuters, one of the world's most corrupt countries. The ministry had to pay $12 million in storage fees and fines for keeping the wasted oil in the port for so long. Busting our buttons, pointing with pride, the new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, welcome to the show. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, from the world headquarters of Le Show, this is Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. How does that happen? And now, news of the Olympic movement. Dateline London. The British Army's Special Forces undercover soldiers are scouting major shopping centers in London to assess the capital's vulnerability to a Mumbai-style attack during the Olympics. A terror attack is highly likely, according to the British government's Olympic security strategy. The vulnerability of shopping centers to terror threats is echoed in a report published this week warning that Islamic extremists are, quote, highly likely to mount terror attacks at the Games next year. Two Special Air Service men suspected of leaking details of the classified counterterror operation have been arrested on suspicion of breaching the official Secrets Act, according to The Independent. And the London mayor has been urged to introduce further, more effective measures to tackle air pollution, following an environmental report which warns that legal limits are likely to be breached because of traffic increases during the Olympic Games. An official report on the environmental impact of the Games reveals that increases in traffic along the Olympic route network will lead to European legal limits on air pollution being exceeded. And here's a new word, speaking of words. The modeling carried out by consultants employed by the Olympic Delivery Agency states that, quote, the number of daily mean exceedances at some roadside sites is anticipated to be more than the allowable number of exceedances. They're exceeding their exceedances limit, don't you see? If the Olympic Delivery Agency and the mayor do not achieve a 30% reduction in normal traffic during the period of the Games, then the level of pollution will be even greater than the high number of exceedances predicted in the strategic environmental assessment. The current traffic reduction plan relies upon persuading Londoners not to travel. Good plan. Transport Minister Norman Baker is reported to have warned it would be impossible for London to accommodate the visitors anticipated for the Games, as well as going about its business as usual. And the British Hospitality Association is outraged at the inflated prices. It has provided a large number of rooms to the London organizers at a fair price, only to find them sold on to corporate hospitality agents, adding huge markups. Come for the traffic, stay for the markups. And Danny Boyle, the film director masterminding the opening ceremony of the London Olympics, has pleaded for the start time to be delayed till sunset to allow his show maximum visual impact. Meaning visitors might not get to start their journeys home until after 1 a.m. The Olympics. It's a movement. And everybody needs one. Every day. It's thrilling, isn't it? Just the prospect is thrilling. And then we'll look back and we'll be thrilled. Dateline Wilmington, North Carolina. This is news, ladies and gentlemen, about our Army Corps of Engineers. A report commissioned by the Army Corps says the Corps won't be able to live up to the expectations placed on it in the future. Imagine that. And they've done so well so far. The Army Corps asked the National Research Council to give some independent advice on how to proceed in the future. Did the options include give back the keys? The report highlights some major challenges for the Corps. No kidding, department. The main problem seems to be funding. Isn't that convenient? The report notes a declining level of investment in the civil works infrastructure owned and operated by the Corps of Engineers. Really? I thought the American people owned it. Isn't that nutty? The report also mentions that Army Corps personnel have a much broader range of duties now than years ago. They don't just build levees and dams anymore. Yes, you read my mind there. They're responsible for an increasing number of complex maintenance and rehabilitation projects, as well as ecological services. Don't you know? Any of the problems is a backlog of projects that aren't fully funded, making for stop-and-start work and overall inefficient project delivery. Again, this is an agency that was asked by the Corps to assess it. Very independent, you see. Meanwhile, speaking of environmental and other new projects, in St. Bernard Parish, Louisiana, where the building of the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet Canal by the Army Corps of Engineers in the late 60s, or in the 60s, precipitated widespread environmental damage and precipitated the flooding of the eastern side of New Orleans in 2005, the Corps has been given the job by the Congress to remediate and mitigate the environmental damage. This story is now spreading outside of New Orleans into the rest of Louisiana. And so, a Baton Rouge newspaper reports today that the Corps has a controversial proposal for undoing the environmental damage done by that canal. Digging another canal. That's part of a key part of a $3 billion plan to fix the damage left by the MRGO. The Corps says the work will help restore wetlands, the natural buffer zones that Louisiana is losing along its low-lying coasts. The bottom line with the Corps, says a local resident, fix one problem, create four more. Scientists and many St. Bernard Parish residents agree the marshes need an infusion of Mississippi River water and its land-building sediment, but after a century of floods and environmental damage caused by misguided projects, many built by the Corps is having trouble selling its latest one. The parish was separated from the city, from the rest of from New Orleans, as was the Lower Ninth Ward, when the Industrial Canal was dug, designed to connect the Mississippi River with industrial sites near Lake Pontchartrain, but it turned into a flood maker that inundated both areas during Hurricane Betsy and Katrina. You can't just cut the levee and dig these straight hard lines across this delta environment without consequences, says Richard Campanella, a Tulane University geographer who studied Louisiana's history of canal digging, dating back to 1719. I know, but now they don't have enough money, so they'll really do it right. Won't they? Doesn't that? Couldn't? Won't? But wait. There is more. The Corps this winter decided to make public a report revealing that its electric barrier system, declined. I should have known. To make public a report revealing that its electric barrier system is not operating at a level strong enough to repel all sizes of Asian carp, which are in one of the Great Lakes. Saying it would be released with a batch of related studies in late summer or fall. That meant even members of a government advisory panel created to assess and evaluate effective methodologies, engineering and science-based methods to keep Asian carp from pushing their way up the Chicago Canal system would be kept in the dark. Well, they can grow mushrooms. The agency subsequently decided to go public after the conservation groups filed a Freedom of Information Act request. The Army Corps did finally release the study to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, revealing the agency knew as early as 2009 that the barrier may not be operating at a level strong enough to repel young carp. Just give back the keys, guys. Just give back the keys. We'll figure out what to do with them. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Meet her? I don't even know her. Since Japan's Fukushima nuclear plant began leaking, those watching with consternation have included the Mirar Aboriginal people of Australia's Northern Territory, who were determined to limit uranium mining on their land despite the promise of vast riches. The Mirar are the traditional owners of land where uranium has been mined for more than 30 years and exported all over the world. TEPCO, operator of the Fukushima plant, is a long-standing customer of the principal mine of the Aborigines. The senior traditional elder in the area, Yvonne Margarula, has written to the UN Secretary General expressing her people's sorrow about Japan's suffering and their concern. Quote, given the long history between Japanese nuclear companies and Australian uranium miners, it is likely that the radiation problems at Fukushima are at least in part being fueled by uranium derived from our traditional land, she said. This makes us feel very sad. She also told the UN Secretary General that events in Japan had strengthened the Mirar's resolve to oppose work at a second mine, the world's largest known undeveloped uranium deposit. Instead, they want to see it incorporated into a World Heritage-listed national park. Uranium mining has a troubled history. The Ranger deposit, which is the one that's now operated by the mining giant Rio Tinto, was developed against the wishes of the Aboriginal people. The traditional owners have received royalties of more than $200 million. Ms. Margarula told a parliamentary inquiry a few years ago that mining had, quote, completely upturned our lives, bringing greater access to alcohol and many arguments between Aboriginal people, mainly about money. It has also taken our country away from us and destroyed it, billabongs and creeks gone forever. There are hills of poisonous rock and great holes in the ground with poisonous mud. The Mirar's ancient dreaming stories warned that a lethal power named Jang would be unleashed if their lands were disturbed. Her late father had warned the Australian government in the late 1970s when mining began on their land that Jang might kill all over the world, she said, adding, no one listened to him. The Mirar's willingness to forego untold riches may seem hard to believe. It has a precedent. Last year, Jeffrey Lee, the traditional owner of a uranium deposit at Koongara, gave the land to a national park. But wait, there's more. Dateline Berlin, Germany will drop nuclear power as soon as possible. This from Chancellor Angela Merkel in a major policy reversal that will alter the energy mix in Europe's largest economy. The German government will decide by mid-June how long the country's 17 nuclear reactors are allowed to remain online, Merkel said. We want to exit from nuclear power generation as soon as possible and make the transition to renewable energy sources faster, she said after talks with state governors. Is she crazy? Is she nuts? Is she... Wind power generated on land and offshore will be one of the main pillars of Germany's new energy mix. Shutting down reactors earlier than planned would require greater efforts to increase the share of renewables, build new power lines, and reduce overall energy consumption. Merkel said it may involve building new coal or gas-fired power stations to provide baseload capacity. The meeting came on the heels of a series of hasty political decisions Berlin took in response to the Japanese nuclear crisis. She, in March, decided to shut down 7 of Germany's oldest reactors temporarily to test their safety, adding they may not be restarted. This is a complete U-turn from Merkel's past policies. Hundreds of thousands of people in North Carolina and South Carolina may not know that they're exposed to low levels of radioactive tritium in water. There's our friend tritium again, Addie.
Yeah, I like him.
This is according to an Asbury Park Press investigation. Some nuclear power plants routinely discharge water contaminated by tritium into lakes and rivers used for swimming, fishing, and drinking water. Well, at least people don't pee in it. Some public water systems that tap into lakes with tritium don't test for the pollutant in their water. Well, why would they? Otherwise, they'd find it. Instead, some rely on lake or other testing to ensure that they meet the federal limit for tritium in drinking water. And some systems don't include tritium information in annual water quality reports for customers. But, ladies and gentlemen, just keep repeating to yourself, it's just tritium. The nuclear crisis in Japan also threatens a carefully choreographed British government plan to tackle the world's biggest mountain of plutonium waste currently stored in Cumbria. Japanese nervousness about nuclear power following the meltdown at Fukushima led to a freeze in the international trade of reprocessed nuclear fuel that the British government sees as crucial to solving its own plutonium problem. The preferred strategy to eliminate that growing plutonium stockpile centers on a technology developed to meet the needs of the Japanese market. Yet there are now fears Japan is about to turn its back on the enterprise. It was hoped Japanese contracts with the Sellafield site to make mixed oxide nuclear fuel, MOX, would underpin the economic and political case to tackle Britain's plutonium stockpile with a second multi-billion-dollar MOX fabrication plant on the site. However, Japanese power companies have told Sellafield that recent concerns have forced them to postpone indefinitely the shipment of French-made MOX nuclear fuel that would have been transported on British vessels operated from Sellafield. This is significant because that shipment was not destined for the stricken reactors, but for unaffected reactors operated by another company, Chubu Electric. They have now indicated because of long-term production problems that have dogged the existing Sellafield MOX plant, they will not be taking any reprocessed fuel from Britain until at least the end of the decade, nearly 20 years after the plant was opened to serve the Japanese market. That would mean the existing plant, which was designed to supply more than 1,000 tons of mixed oxide nuclear fuel over 10 years, is likely to produce a tiny fraction of this before it is due to be decommissioned at enormous cost to the British taxpayer. This is seen as a huge blow to the business of making and selling MOX fuel, touted by the British government as the best way of dealing with Britain's stockpile of civilian plutonium, which is itself the product of nuclear waste reprocessing at Sellafield. Yes, we're planning a mockumentary about it right now. No, we're not. At least one federal analyst has questioned whether improvements made by U.S. nuclear plants after 9/11 would work to stave off a severe accident. The concern voiced in an email from last year was in response to a federal study which found that Peach Bottom Atomic Power Station, thanks to those post-9/11 improvements, would avert nuclear core damage after a hypothetical two-day blackout. Without those updates, the study showed a much more dire result. The author of the email says that certain post-9/11 measures, quote, have really not been reviewed to ensure they will work to mitigate severe accidents, unquote. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission disputes that assessment made by one of its staff, said a spokesman. Well, a spokesman should know. Aren't they trained to spoke? We are now at a level 7 at Fukushima, equivalent to Chernobyl. Michael Friedlander, a former senior nuclear power plant operator for 13 years in the United States, told the New York Times the biggest surprise in the Japanese reassessment this week was that it took a month for public confirmation that that much radiation had been released. The risks associated with iodine-131 contamination in Europe from the Japanese meltdown are no longer negligible, according to a French research body on radioactivity. The group is advising pregnant women and infants against risky behavior, such as consuming fresh milk or vegetables with large leaves. That, ladies and gentlemen, is risky behavior. Clean, cheap, safe. Too risky to meter. Our friend the atom. Addy, stay away from those large leaves.
You know I will. Bye-bye.
Well, you might be safe. You might be reborn. You might own a car with a big, loud home. Maybe it's just news on your television, or it might be God trying to get your attention. Are you an engineer working on a farm, or a
Casanova with a whole lot of charm. It might be a mouse living in your kitchen, or it might be God trying to get your attention. Well, it might sound bad, or it might sound good. Might be made of steel, or it might be made of wood. Maybe it's just news on your television, or it might be God trying to get your attention. Well, it might be in the church house, or it might be on the street. Somehow or another, every soul has got to meet. Well, it might be in the city, or it might be in town. But one way or another, we're gonna find the higher ground. Well, you might be deaf, or you might be blind. She'll put the message right in your mind. Might look like a plan or a coalition, or it might be God trying to get your attention. Might be dumb, but you'll get the answer when the answer comes. It might be news on your television, or it might be God trying to get your attention. It might be God trying to get your attention. Listen to the sea, listen to the mountain, listen to the man, listen to the woman, listen to the man, listen to the rain, listen to the wind, listen to your mind, and then listen all over again. Listen to the birds, listen to the trees, listen to the river, listen to the sea. Listen to the mountain, listen to the man, listen to the woman, listen to the rain, listen to the rain, listen to the wind, listen to your mind, and then listen all over again. Well, listen, listen.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First, the Japanese apology of the week. Deputy Chief Cabinet Secretary Tetsuro Fukuyama apologized this week to residents of Litate in Fukushima Prefecture after the government announced it is seeking to evacuate the village, located more than 30 kilometers from the crippled nuclear plant. I apologize from the bottom of my heart for causing dismay, concern, and anxieties by the move, he told a meeting of 100 representatives of the village. The government said it would begin evacuating residents around 1 month from the date of the announcement. So pack up, everybody. Dayline Vienna, an Austrian baker under investigation for icing cakes with Nazi symbols, has apologized to the head of a Holocaust awareness group for causing offense. The cake maker met with the head of the Austria 1000 committee, which has called for the bakery to be banned. I called him because from media reports I got the impression that he knew what he had done was wrong and that he was sorry for it, said Willie Merrill, said in a statement on the committee's website. Austrian law bans the use of Nazi symbols. The baker said he was only making what a customer wanted. That's right. He was only following orders. WLWT, I believe that's in Cincinnati, anchor Cherie Paolello has apologized for a hot microphone gaffe that occurred a couple of weeks ago in which he mocked former Ohio Congressman Steve Dryhouse during a segment about his future plans following a loss in last November's election. Cincinnati affiliate was airing a report on Dryhouse's decision to accept the position with the Peace Corps when the segment's audio was abruptly swapped out for Paolello's live mic, catching her impersonating Dryhouse, saying, "I'm completely depressed. I'm joining the Peace Corps," she's heard saying over footage of the interview. "How did I lose?" And at that point, the station and Paolello realized the mistake and went back to the correct audio. In an email sent to the Cincinnati Inquirer, Paolello apologized for her remarks, saying she was in a joking mood after spending the morning at the first Cincinnati Reds game of the season. "My attempt at joking around about his beard was inappropriate and unprofessional," she says. "I can tell you I was in no way trying to be disrespectful to the Peace Corps, Mr. Dryhouse, or his years of service. I immediately contacted him by phone to express my deepest apology, which he graciously accepted. I'm not sure why I made that comment because it honestly does not reflect who I am or how serious I take my job and responsibilities or how full I learned my adverbs. I hope you'll accept my sincerest apology and consider watching News 5 in the future." More in anchor than in sorrow, I would say. But her mention of joking around about his beard is odd because, based on the YouTube clip of the event, she didn't mention his beard. But she's sorry about it. Maybe she's sorry for not mentioning it. Deadline, Jersey City, New Jersey. Superintendent of Schools Charles T. Epps Jr. apologized for saying young ladies are the community's worst enemy, according to his spokeswoman. He apologized at a press conference to a group of clergy. "He apologized for saying what he said," said spokeswoman Paula Kristen. But during his press conference, Epps defended what he meant to say. "Some of these kids are rude. Young ladies don't act like young ladies, using foul language. It shouldn't be that way." But he wasn't just picking on girls. And another Japanese apology. Chief Cabinet Secretary Yukio Edano apologized this week to residents near the crippled plant and the global community after Japan raised the severity rating to 7. Dayton, Augusta, Georgia. Masters golf tournament officials apologized to sports columnist Tara Sullivan of the Bergen, New Jersey Record after a security guard denied her entry to a locker room for a post-tournament interview. Augusta National spokesman Steve Ethun said the guard acted improperly in stopping Sullivan because club policy is to provide equal access for all reporters. The club has no female members, but several female reporters at the tournament confirmed they had made numerous trips to the locker room for interviews in the past without incident. An advertising firm has apologized for placing a billboard for a TV show called The Walking Dead on the side of a funeral parlor in County Durham. I guess that would be Ireland. The unintended and unfortunate juxtaposition caused raised eyebrows. The advert for the Channel 5 post-apocalyptic drama has since been removed from the exterior wall of the funeral care premises. An alternative poster has been put in its place. A spokeswoman for Clear Channel, the firm responsible for the billboard, apologized. Clear Channel apologizes for any offense caused by the unfortunate juxtaposition of this advertisement, which was certainly not intended. And here is former Florida Governor Charlie Crist.
Hi, I'm Charlie Crist. During 2010, I ran for a seat in the United States Senate. During that campaign, a video advertisement utilized a song made famous by David Byrne and the Talking Heads called Road to Nowhere. The advertisement was posted on my campaign website, on YouTube, and sent out via email. Regrettably, the campaign did not ask permission to obtain a license from Mr. Byrne to use Road to Nowhere in the advertisement. In fact, Mr. Byrne has never permitted his songs to be used for advertising of any kind, a position I respect deeply. The use of David Byrne's song and his voice in my campaign advertisement without his permission was wrong and should not have occurred. I do not support, nor do I condone, any actions taken by anyone involved in the Senate campaign that were inconsistent with David Byrne's rights, or with any other artist's rights, or the various legal protections afforded to intellectual property. I sincerely apologize to David Byrne for using his famous song and his unique voice in my campaign advertisement without his permission. I pledge that, should there be any future election campaigns for me, I will respect and uphold the rights of artists and obtain permission or a license for the use of any copyrighted work. Thank you.
Thank you. And not yet apologizing, Charlie Crist, for not doing a take two on that tape. And finally, another Japanese apology. The president of Tokyo Electric Power Company, owner of the crippled nuclear power plant, apologized for the nuclear emergency at the facility, which is leaking radioactive substances. Masataka Shimizu says TEPCO hopes to announce steps to restore the cooling system at an early date, but he did not provide a specific timetable for the final end of the disaster. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature in this broadcast. News of AFPAC! Not auditioning. Former Pakistan military ruler Pervez Musharraf has abandoned his plans of returning to Pakistan from self-exile in Britain after the Pakistani military government, or leadership, sorry, refused to provide him extra security to counter multiple threats to his life. This way he gets to see the Olympics, so it's win-win. Musharraf launched his own political party in October 2010, said he would return to lead the party and contest the next elections, but he'd been seeking guarantees of security from the current military leadership beyond that to which he is entitled as former president, you see. He is scared, naturally. The level of threat he faces is much higher. That's why he wanted to be dead sure that enemies couldn't get him if he comes back. A friend of Ms. Sharif was quoted as saying, on condition of, don't kill me. Musharraf's hopes faded when the current hierarchy of the Pakistani military cold-shouldered his demands for extra security to spearhead his politics in Pakistan. It looks like the military generals are not interested in him and his political designs anymore. It is not their tradition to support a former chief's political gamble because they are of no use, commented another associate. So no more Perv. Perv stays in. I'll run into him before they do, if he's hanging around London. See you at the Olympics, Perv. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From ABC News Australia, former Guantanamo Bay prisoner Mamdou Habib is suing some of the biggest names in Egypt over his allegations of torture. Habib, an Egyptian-born Australian, has long argued he was treated badly after his arrest in Afghanistan almost 10 years ago. He alleges he was taken illegally, rendition, to Egypt, where he says he was tortured and beaten by local security forces. He claims Egypt's current vice president, Omar Suleiman, led the abuse. Habib claims U.S. and Australian authorities were aware of what was being done to him and even sanctioned the use of torture in a bid to extract information from him. And attention fans of Rupert Murdoch and his ethics, Scotland Yard has accepted for the first time the extent of the phone hacking scandal surrounding the Murdoch-owned newspaper News of the World. It told the court a number of potential victims whose voicemails were targeted by the paper is likely to be substantially more than 90. Previously, the Metropolitan Police said they had found a total of 91 PIN numbers necessary to access a mobile phone's voicemail in possession of the private investigator hired by the News of the World. But now the hearing is told the potential victims list is substantially higher than that. News International, owned by Rupert Murdoch, has offered Sienna Miller about $190,000 in damages for the reported hacking of her phone. And her former partner, Jude Law, is about to sue as well for the same thing. Tiny Bahrain, vital American ally in the Gulf region, is reimagining itself as a classic Cold War police state, reports the Sydney Morning Herald. In the aftermath of the democracy uprisings across the Middle East, the island's Sunni hereditary monarchy was ahead of the reform curve. In January, 3 months before everything started blowing up, it set about repressing political parties and arresting majority Shiite activists by the hundreds. But in the aftermath of declaring a state of emergency still being enforced by troops from neighboring Saudi Arabia, it's the kingdom's hospitals through which the world can see. A regime which, compared with those in Libya and Syria, has earned only the mildest of rebukes from the U.S. administration. Despite denials by authorities, reputable non-government organizations such as Human Rights Watch and Doctors Without Borders have documented systematic intimidation of doctors and other medical staff in Bahrain hospitals who might treat injured demonstrators, and a takeover of health facilities by the security forces in an attempt to round up demonstrators. Mass arrests continued even after the demonstrations have petered out in Bahrain. Government workers suspected of involvement in the protests are being hounded from their jobs, and the authorities have embarked on a media witch hunt. Well, where else are you going to find witches? New emergency regulations authorize security forces to invade houses without a warrant and to dissolve political parties, unions, and any organization they deem to be a danger to the state. They can censor television, newspapers, and the internet, and they may seal off whole sections of the country. It's like San Francisco over there. Those who've been released, protesters have been released, have complained of torture by electrical shock, beatings, and sexual abuse. Doctors Without Borders accused the regime of using health facilities as bait, with police sweeps looking for injuries consistent with involvement in protests and then hauling away the patients. The regime crackdown had paralyzed hospitals and turned them into places to be feared. A senior UN representative on torture, Juan Mendez, issued a rare reprimand to the U.S. government this week for failing to allow him to meet in private PFC Bradley Manning, the U.S. soldier accused of being the WikiLeaks source currently held in the Marine brig. It's the kind of censure the UN normally reserves for authoritarian regimes around the world, according to The Guardian. Mendez, the UN special rapporteur on torture, said, "I am deeply disappointed and frustrated by the prevarication of the U.S. government with regard to my attempts to visit Mr. Manning." Unquote. Prevarication, it's UN speak for lying, I believe. Mendez told The Guardian, "I'm acting on a complaint that the regimen of this detainee amounts to cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment and torture. Until I have all the evidence in front of me, I cannot say whether he has been treated inhumanely. The vast majority of states," he says, "allow for visits to detainees without conditions, but the U.S. would only allow him to make an official visit, would not allow him to make an official visit, only a private one. An official visit would mean he meets Manning without a guard. A private visit means a guard and also the prisoner. Anything the prisoner says to the U.N. representative could be used against him in a court-martial." BP officials try to take control of a $500 million fund pledged by the oil company for independent research into the consequences of the year-old oil disaster. Documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act, reports The Guardian, show BP officials openly discussing how to influence the work of scientists supported by the fund. "Can we direct the Gulf of Mexico Research Initiative," asks a BP environmental expert, "funding to a specific study? What influence do we have over the vessel's equipment driving the studies versus the questions?" The documents may reinforce fears voiced by scientists that BP has too much leverage over studies into the impact of last year's oil disaster. Some of the UK's most prominent business leaders, including individuals who gave their personal stamp of approval to the aggressive spending cuts by the British government, are now saying they have growing concerns about the state of the economy, warning of weak growth and rising inflation ahead. Aside from that, ladies and gentlemen, everything's fine. News from outside the bubble. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
Fluctuations in penguin populations in the Antarctic are linked more strongly to the availability of their primary food source than to changes in their habitats, according to a new study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The research indicates that species often considered likely winners of changing conditions, such as large-scale ice melting, may actually end up as the most vulnerable to the impacts of climate change. The two penguin species focused on in the study rely on small shrimp-like creatures known as krill for their survival. A previous assessment of krill in the Southern Ocean suggests their abundance has declined by as much as 80% since the 1970s. For penguins and other species, krill is the linchpin to the food web, regardless of their environmental preferences. They studied two different penguin species, one that likes to hang out on ice and one that doesn't. We see a connection between climate change and penguin populations through the loss of habitat for their main food source. Hey, we still got animated penguins. Dateline Ithaca, New York, extracting natural gas from the Marcellus Shale could do more to aggravate global warming than mining coal, according to a new Cornell study published in the May issue of Climatic Change Letters. Natural gas has been touted as clean-burning fuel. However, ecologist Robert Haworth warns we should be more concerned about methane leaking into the atmosphere during hydraulic fracturing to get natural gas, called fracking. Natural gas is mostly methane, a much more potent greenhouse gas, especially in the short term, 105 times more warming impact, pound for pound, than carbon dioxide. So there goes that. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, I'm hit at a couple places with the word new in their names this week, so wish me no flightmares. See how easy it is to use? And you don't even have to be performing in a docusoap to use it. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, and available as a free podcast through kcrw.com. And it'd be just like avoiding a flightmare if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and music heard hereon, available at harryshearer.com. This program is on Twitter, at The Harry Shearer. And where's the Big Uneasy playing this week? Among other places, Wasilla, Alaska. Think of that. All the information about it, thebiguneasy.com. Come on down, Sarah. You'll like it. You'll get it. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.